Hey everyone, this is Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. I grew up in the greater Seattle area and have lived in the Pacific Northwest my whole life. There is a wonderful, vibrant music scene up here with an incredibly welcoming community. And growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast will explore the Northwest music scene, how to navigate it, the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. This is Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast is killing the game right now, coming off the heels of multiple sold-out shows, including Numos in the Neptune Theater. This summer, he'll also be joining the lineups for Paradiso, Capitol Hill Block Party, and Bumper Shoot. He's also the producer behind the records of Scarlet Park, Sam LeChow, and Ryan Caraveo. So please welcome Seattle's upcoming hitmaker, EDM producer, and fellow podcaster, Jake Crocker.
Hey.
How goes it?
It's going.
Thanks for coming out and doing this.
Yeah, man. It's been been quite the drive over here.
Yeah?
Over to Bellevue.
The dreaded east side.
Gosh. I used to be convinced when I was a kid that Bellevue gave me a headache every time I came here. It's one of those things that I don't know why I thought that, but maybe it was true. I don't know.
I mean, there's definitely kind of a stigma in the air. So I grew up in Redmond, actually. Yeah. And so it was funny. Well, I was born on the plateau in Issaquah, and we're like, we're never moving closer or further up the east side. We moved to Redmond, and my mom's like, we will never move to Bellevue. And we moved to Bellevue. And so now I'm just waiting for whatever the
downtown
next.
Downtown Seattle, baby.
Yeah, we are never moving to downtown Seattle.
I'm 4 years. Born and raised Capitol Hill, so it's like this side is like, I mean, this is a wild, wild west. You know?
Yeah. It's funny. So I've just graduated because then I live in North Seattle now. And so it's the gradual move. Yeah. So I don't know if I'm going to go south now or what. I just got to keep
moving.
Got to
make the circle.
Yeah.
End up in Alaska.
Yeah. Up to Alaska, then loop down the coast.
Hey, man, change is good.
Yeah. I actually kind of like crave it sometimes.
Yeah.
I get like 2-3 years in because I was transferred schools too.
Gotcha.
So after I stay in one spot for like 3 years, I start feeling like, okay, why haven't I
done something different?
Yeah. So it was weird being in, I went to school in Eugene, and around my sophomore year, I was like, okay, why, I don't have a change pick. I almost transferred because I just started getting in my own head of, I need to move. It was weird.
I didn't like move around too much. I did my three schools, you know, my middle school, I guess I went to two middle schools. Yeah, and then high school.
Yeah.
And then I guess if you count kindergarten.
Yeah.
Or preschool.
Changing things up.
Shout out to Agape Preschool. Oh. Every once in a while, I'll run around town and be like, hey, man, like, did we go to preschool together? I remember that. Right after high school, I went and did music classes up at Shoreline Community College. And I sat down in this one theory class. I looked in front of me. I'm like, man, that guy looks familiar. I'm like, where did, what the, and I was racking my brain for like 30 minutes. And I was just, oh my God, bro, we were best friends in preschool. I was like,
no
yo, where'd you go to preschool? He was like, Agape, why? I'm like, bro, you've been to my house. Like, I have a picture of us at my pizza party in my backyard. Like, it was crazy.
That's
wild. Yeah, that's nuts. And then we ended up in the same theory class. So
that is,
the world
that
turns,
is crazy.
Right? Yeah.
Best friends to classmates.
Best friends to not even knowing who they were to classmates. But yeah. The world's crazy, but now we're here in Bellevue.
Yeah, so. For sure. Hopefully not end of the line. I think you'll make it out, provided your headache doesn't get too bad.
I'm assuming. I just need some coffee after this. I guess I got headaches from Bellevue until I found coffee.
Coffee just kind of calmed my whole brain.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we're good now, though. We're
cool.
Good. Slightly enjoy Bellevue, I must admit. Just a little bit.
It's nice.
Just a little bit.
Change of scenery for a little bit.
Yeah.
So how did you get from Agape Preschool to, did I say that wrong?
No, that's it.
No, Agape, to music theory class. Like, when did this whole musical journey start?
Man, well, I started doing piano lessons at a young age. I just had a piano in the house. And I started doing lessons probably when I was like 5 or 6, young age, from my music teacher, Jerry, at Berchi School when I went to middle school. Man, I hated Thursdays because I got so scared. Jerry was kind of a scary dude. Yeah. You know, and he was just like, did you do your homework? And I'm like, no.
I did.
So every day I'd stand on the porch and look for Jerry and see if he was going to come. And if he didn't come, I'd be like, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, so piano lessons, I did that at a young age. And then I started playing saxophone when nice. I was in like sixth grade. And then I kind of swiftly stopped both of those. Probably like, you know, about a year after that, you know, it just for some reason, I think I've kind of boiled it down to the fact that I just got bored with that one instrument and I didn't necessarily know what the answer to that was because I had no clue what production was until I started kind of just learning a bit more about, okay, what are the other aspects of this music thing? Because I know I want to do something around it, but I don't want to just be the piano player, or I don't want to just be the saxophone player. I want to do something a bit more. And what is that? And I remember I was over at my cousin's house, and he had this program called Reason on his computer. And he's like, yo, you want to like make some music? And I'm at this point, I'm like 12.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, hell yeah. I don't even know what that means, but let's do it. So he sat down, and I still have the song, which is really tight. It's called No Music, No Vocals, No Scratches.
As in that no was scratch
the,
takes?
That
or...
was the first. Yeah, I don't know. It was like a little vocal sample we found that said that. And then we just chopped it up. And man, yeah, that was the first ever song I quote unquote produced as a 12-year-old. So, yes, that kind of kicked off the love for producing. And then, you know, my dad got me some software that I could learn myself, Ableton.
Nice.
And I just sat down on the couch and just was frustrated for like 4 years until I started like really learning things. So I kind of really started getting into it when I was like 14, 15. And all throughout high school, I would just, you know, have my laptop with me and just like make beats at lunch, make beats in the car, go, you know, make beats in my choir class because Mr. Reuter was tight and he just let me make beats, you know, That just progressed a bit more. You know, I went to high school. We didn't have, like, a music production class, which is unfortunate. We can get to that, too, because I teach music as well now.
Oh, nice.
Which is, you know, something I'm really passionate about, too. So that kind of progressed until I got to a point where I actually was able to get the ideas that were in my head out, like, into the world, like, into my laptop, at least, and started kind of just compiling beats, I guess you could call it. And I started hitting up artists, and then eventually a few of those artists hit me back and were like, hey, you make beats? I was like, yeah, what's up? You know? just gradually started working with those artists and getting, you know, crazy amounts of studio time and just learning what a producer does sitting in the studio. And it just felt like it kind of came naturally of just learning like, okay, this is what should happen right here. This is what needs to happen. You know, in the intro, this is what needs to happen in our bridge, blah, blah, so on and so forth, you know. And just that felt really natural to be directing certain songs and learning from the people I was around of like how these songs are created and what makes a good song. That music education came really fast at a young age, you know, 2 a.m. studio sessions when I got to wake up and go to high school in the morning, you know, like 8 a.m. So it was nuts. But, you know, I was down to do it. I didn't really party in high school at all. Like, I never went to parties. My friends stopped inviting me because I was so boring. I always said no.
Yeah.
And I was just in the right studio all day, you know, and I I just found a love for it. And I became a bit addicted to just creating. And I really felt like the more I sat down and just did it, the more I learned. Because it was true, you know, the more you put your head down and just learn something, the quicker it's going to come and the more proficient you're going to be at that certain skill. But I just did that, and I don't really even remember that phase of learning. I only remember just being extremely frustrated once, and it's like, I'm never going to be able to get my ideas out. Like, I'm never going to do it. And then, like, here we are.
Yeah.
Tight. Oh, cool. That just happened. But
from I'm never going to make it to now I'm going to play Capitol Hill block party.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Crazy world. But, I mean, even to the point of, like, not even thinking about making it, but just thinking about, like, I guess making it as a song. Yeah, like, how do I make it? How do I get these ideas out? But, yeah, it just progressed really slowly and quickly at the same time in a way. the education came really fast, where I was forced to learn, you know, which is awesome.
Were you doing it, like, learning by doing of just trial and error? Were you watching, like, videos, or how did you learn?
YouTube was my best friend. But then I remember I was like, remember I was 14, probably maybe 15, and I was, you know, doing my YouTube thing, and I was like, man, I wish I just knew somebody that knew this. And I didn't really. So I went on Craigslist and I found, no, I was like, I just typed in Ableton lessons and popped up this ad from this dude named Andrew. And I was like, oh, okay. What's up, man? Like, hey, I'm Jake. I'm like 15. I'm looking for, you know, for Ableton lessons. And he was like, tight, come on over to my house. And my dad's like, hell no. You know, you ain't going to this guy's house. I was like, Dad, I think this is worthy. He's like, fine. All right, let's rock.
Yeah.
So, you know, we drove over to this guy's house. And then, you know, Andrew Luck, shout out to Andrew. I still know him to this day. You know, he taught me a lot of the basics of Ableton that I needed to know to just kind of get off the ground to start making my own ideas. You know, he filled in the gaps that YouTube couldn't hit. So, but yeah, I mean, honestly, nowadays, like, man, YouTube, or like we were talking about lynda.com, like all these resources of just learning how to produce are like so much more available than they were when I was younger, even because production has grown crazy. I mean, you could walk around Seattle and throw a rock out of a window and hit a producer.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just
a producer. Not a producer. Good.
No,
producer,
absolutely. But, no, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's plenty of, I mean, I'm not afraid to say there's plenty of shitty music out there, but but the fact that people, even if you're making good, bad music, whatever, you know, that's all just an opinion anyway.
True.
Is the fact that the cool thing is that everybody's creating.
Yeah.
You know, and whether it's good or bad or, you know, whatever, it's still creating. And that to me is pretty cool that we all have the ability to sit down with a freaking laptop and make a song that could do anything. We don't know, you know.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing, you know. So the world's come pretty far since the recording in the 90s or 80s or whatever. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Fortunately, not running out of tape.
Yeah, so not running out of tape. I teach 7th and 8th grade music production and high school music production. And I was trying to tell these kids because they don't know, you know. Mm-hmm. They don't know. I mean, neither do I. I've never been, like, forced to record something on tape, even though I want to someday. I do.
That would be
pretty
dope.
But, you know, like, a lot of these kids just don't even have the knowledge of, like, how that was made. It's just normal when you can record a voice on a laptop. You know, I'm just teaching these kids, like, look, we could record all day long and it costs us nothing. Versus, like, okay, here's your roll of tape. If you're about to run out of tape, my guy, like, you gotta figure out what you're gonna do with that.
Yeah.
That's a different world problem now, you know. The cost of recording and the cost of creating music is so much cheaper than it used to be.
I was reading Duff McKagan's bio for when Guns N' Roses was doing Use Your Illusion 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And their drummer was so strung out.
Yeah.
And they ran out of tape that they had to go in. And they were literally taking scissors and cutting up his drum parts.
Oh, my gosh.
To stitch it together to get something usable.
And that's called sampling a drum break.
Yeah. But I was like, that sounds terrible. I get upset enough if I don't, like, nail a take. You know what I mean?
I'd imagine bringing an actual pair of scissors in to go cut some tape.
Oh, my gosh.
Different world problems. Yeah, I swear. Now we just have to hit Control E and it just cuts.
But yeah, that's too fun. So that's really cool that you're doing the music education stuff. And I don't mean to derail too much, but do you mind talking about
absolutely
that? Like, where are you teaching at?
I love talking about this because it's one of the really important things that I'm doing right now. You know, besides just making music, I think the really important part is somehow figuring out how you can extend that education further than just people putting headphones and listening to your music, you know?
Yeah.
So started teaching at St. Joseph's, which is where I went to middle school. It's called Exploratory, and we had it back in the day, and we had, like, choir and art. My mom's actually the art teacher there too. So,
oh, nice.
You know, choir, art, and band, and all that kind of just normal middle school stuff. But now, like, they approach me and they're like, "Hey, we know what you're doing with music and stuff. We'd love to somehow incorporate that within Exploratory." I was like, "Dude, that would be so cool. You have no idea where this whole music production thing is heading." So that was, like, probably two years ago now. And I sat down and just wrote a curriculum. I was like, okay, I want to do this. And through that whole process and through, like, the past, and I teach at Nova High School as well, and through the past really 2 years of learning what music production knowledge can do. It's amazing, man. It really is. It's like, you know, these kids aren't just learning how to sit down and make beats, you know, even in, yeah, from the outside, it looks like that, but the skills that they're learning in order to create and just kind of dig into the depths of their minds to find things that they're thinking of freely themselves, it's amazing. And not to mention the technical skills of how,
yeah,
you know, understanding a program like a DAW, digital audio workspace, like understanding that translates to anything, editing videos, you know, creating any kind of soundscape. Like there's so many different lines of work within the creative field and the entertainment field that people don't often see until they immerse themselves like within that that area. So I'm trying to, you know, do my best to bring the knowledge that I've gained so far, and not just within Ableton, but within the industry as well, of just, you know, teaching these kids a bit about the music industry, the entertainment industry, and at the same time teaching them how to just create what they want to create, you know. So
yeah, that's incredible, because that's a lot of like why I'm doing this podcast is, hey, when I was trying to start, I didn't know what to do. So the fact that you're actually getting in the room with people, students, and saying, look, when I was your age, this is what I, or obviously here's what I'm doing now, and here's what you need to know, it's just helping, I'm sure, quite a few people just get leaps and bounds ahead of where we could have been at that time.
Exactly. I mean, and if the only thing I do is open up a door to let these kids see another aspect of life, you know, that you don't just have to be a lawyer. I mean, not to say being a lawyer is bad. Like I have one. Yeah. You know, I need one, you know, or whatever it is, you know, there's just, there's different things that people can do within life that they don't necessarily always see, just in a textbook. So
And especially like you were talking about the production side, it even applies to like if this someone wants to go into physics and you're talking about, you know, sine waves and stuff like that and how to mold these things, you have to have like a physics understanding, and it makes that stuff exciting when you see it. I remember I didn't get a chance to take it, but when I was at UO, I was in a music hall and there was a physics of music, and
I took that class.
And it was fascinating for people because they were like, oh, I enjoy music, and so I get to apply really technical and difficult concepts that in any other medium may not have been interesting
in a
and
musical they learned format.
And then it sparked some people's interest in physics and they went on to that. Some people it was, I liked physics and now I'm into music, and like you said, it opens people's perspective.
If it leads to nothing, the fact that that option was even presented is the best part.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, even, you know, seeing these kids create something after like a 10-week course, right, is nuts. Like you shouldn't be able to sit down and make an idea in 10 weeks. Maybe I'm just that good of a teacher. No, I'm kidding. No, really, like these kids are creating their own ideas after you know only 10 weeks of instruction on it, and man, it's nuts. And shout out to Ableton for being super helpful with regards to music education and stuff.
They're
very responsive I mean, because you know, if I have a class of 15 kids, that means I have to get 15 licenses.
And, yeah,
you know, I mean, they're very, very. I mean, even on their site, they just say you can get 40% off if you're an educator or a teacher or a student. You know, so I mean, they're very very receptive to the whole knowledge and education of music and music production specifically. So yeah, they're very helpful.
That's
very
fantastic.
Helpful. Yeah.
And I have Pro Tools, but my friend Aaron that I work with is doing a lot of production on some of the stuff, and just seeing how easy Ableton makes it for people. Like it's obviously production is not easy, but in the way it's so seamless, and I get kind of jealous. Like things that just like the EQ being visualized at the bottom.
Yeah.
Like, I want that so badly. And
never too late to start.
I know, I'm like in it now.
I've converted quite a few of you guys.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because like I have an EQ and it works. I'm sitting there, I was like, you know what would be really cool is if I could see the wave right now, and I can't.
Go get the Fab Filter EQ.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, love that EQ.
I'm gonna
get one. Very visual.
I have some tough questions for you later of that stuff. Get ready.
I love the tech questions.
before I try to stump you.
Yeah.
When you're going into production or you're writing, how do you Or I guess I'll start with this. What's your approach when you've got a song? What comes first? Does it change?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And I've answered that a few times when people ask me. Because for me, I guess to start, it's different for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I've sat down with producers who start with totally different things that I start with. And we'll all end up at the same place, which is a finished song, right? But for myself, I've found to be most productive when I start with a melody or a chord progression, because I don't know, that's what captures me personally within a song. Drums are extremely important, but for me, I've found that I can kind of bring the song where I emotionally need to bring it to if I start with my chords or my melody or something that is pulling. Whereas the drums seem to be more pushing, the chords just seem to pull. Yeah. And that's kind of what attracts me to it. And I guess the thing is, when I listen to a song and the drums are tight, I'm going to be like, man, those drums are knocking. That's sick. But when I listen to a song and those chords are just like, like that right there is what brings me back to it. It depends on the genre too, totally. as well. And the approach of whoever you're working with. If I'm sitting down and producing with somebody else, I want to read the room. That's my job as a producer is to figure out how we can get the best out of this one product, this product being created right here. So, yeah, I guess if that answers it all, yeah. I like starting with something melodic.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the same way.
Yeah,
I'm chords, melody, and then drums. And it's funny, my buddy Art is all about the beat. So if we ever try to co-write, it becomes interesting of who gets to start the song.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I need that for him. It's the soul is kind of what we talk about. Like the soul for songs for me are typically melody chords. Yeah. And he's like, I need the beat before I go anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting too. Cause I was watching an interview or not an interview, a video about like Travis Scott and how he's actually a phenomenal producer as well. And I guess he always starts with the drums, and that's his thing, And I think the cool thing is that we all do it a little different, which makes everything unique in its own way.
For sure.
So, yeah.
What inspires you typically? What do you pull from?
Everything. I've known a lot of people who are like, I'm not inspired by anything but myself, and I'm like, man, shut up. Because honestly, like, everything is inspiring. Shitty music is inspiring, to the point of where, like, if I listen to a shitty song, I'm like, man, I need to make something better than that. That's inspiring me,
Yeah, for sure.
So you have to embrace that and understand that it's okay to be inspired. It's okay to take ideas as long as you make them your own and do your own thing with them, and being inspired by those who inspire you in music or in anything creative or whatever, just letting that and not seeing inspiration as a bad thing. Because a lot of people see that, it's like, oh, well, I don't want to make something just like this. And it's like, well, make something just like that and then go make something else that's not just like that, because you have that ability. And even with a lot of my students, I'll tell them, like, okay, so you're having trouble creating your own ideas. Take your favorite song and remake it. Those people went through a process of creating your favorite song. You go make your favorite song, and maybe through that, you're going to learn how to make your own favorite song, So, I guess everything inspires me without, it's super, like, lofty and all philosophical and stuff. But everything, in its own way. But,
right.
Yeah. I guess what I listened to in like the past month, I guess, in every different stages inspires me a little differently too. So, yeah.
Yeah. What are you currently listening to right now?
Man, a ton of different stuff. What am I listening to? Well, that Post Malone album was mad tight. I love that album. Love his, man, his melodic, like his vocal melodies are just perfectly in pocket. And I think it was very well produced, and I love looking into the back Wikipedia side of albums, and I just think they did that project really well. And honestly, I'm listening to a lot of like Lewis the Child. I like those guys. You should check them out. Drulu, my guy Sesco from Amsterdam. We're working on some stuff, I'm listening to a lot of the stuff that I'm making with the artists that I'm working with, because I have to.
Yeah.
I love it. But I also have to make sure I figure out what we're doing with it.
Right.
How can we make this the best song? So yeah, I listened to a lot of that, just more of like racking my brain of like, man, how can I do this? I'm a fiend for new music, and I just constantly every day I'm trying to like find new music that I really like, and I don't find it every day. Yeah, which sucks. But you know, but every once in a while when I run across a song that I really like, I'm like, man, that's dope. You know, I like this girl Ash. Oh my gosh, she's super dope. Like I just found her. I put her on my Cookslow Radio thing because I have a little radio show, Cookslow Radio, that I like to just put music together that I have been listening to. She's super tight, man. I mean,
where's she from? Is she local or
man? I don't even know where she's from. I just know she. I found her on a few different songs, and I'm like, man, your voice is pulling. Like you know, we're talking about that pulling aspect. Her voice. I don't know, man. She's really dope. She's really dope. And then there's a bunch of local people that I you know that I love listening to and hearing what they're doing. You know that they all inspire me in their own way. You know, St. Clair. This Ala Tinsley, like all these people that, you know, maybe you know, maybe you don't know, but you will know, you know what I mean? So they're all amazing and inspiring in their own ways, you know? So
that's awesome. You mentioned you're always kind of looking for music. Where do you go look? What's your,
So, I mean, I Spotify for one, I like what they do with their like new release Friday thing. That's pretty cool. Every once in a while, it'll be a good mix like this. You know, last Friday, I didn't get the great mix. I was like, damn, man, I gotta wait till next Friday to see what they give me. But, you know, I like searching on my own. Reddit is a really good really good place to go find new music. There's a bunch of different threads on there that of people posting music in specific genres and whatnot that you listen to that you'll oftentimes find things that you would never hear without, you know, going on there. But also HypeM. You know what HypeM is? HypeM is like if you're trending on HypeM, you're the shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's essentially all blogs like pool together in HypeM and it creates these charts of like what music is popular right now. But it's not like top 40 popular kind of thing. It's
kind of like underground.
Well, yeah, a little bit more underground, but you should check it out. It's really cool.
No, I'm actually just gonna write that down right now.
HypeM and Reddit are two very good resources. But also my friends, you know, the people around me that play music, I'm like, what is that? And like, oh, it's this, check this out. And then I'll listen to that and then I'll hit a related artist and be like, whoa, that person's dope too, you know?
Yeah.
Because my music choice, like it changes every day. You should ask my girlfriend, like, we'll listen to different shit every day in the car. It's like, dude, are you bipolar musically? Like, man, what's going on? But yeah, so.
Yeah. If you weren't doing EDM, what would you do?
Well, hey, I guess the thing, that's a difficult one because I don't like categorizing it as like EDM. Fair. No, it's just because EDM has a stigma. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
Like, like that's by no means what I'm creating. And the thing is like, I've been calling it electronic music because it's tough because I started producing in hip hop. Produced for a bunch of hip hop artists. Met all the moguls in hip hop in New York and LA and all this different stuff, and that's amazing. And I learned that and I gained that skill, but I didn't want to box myself in only being a hip hop guy because, you know, I love hip hop. But, you know, I wanted to start producing some pop music. So I sat down and started kind of just making pop ideas and then co produced Low with St. Clair, who's featured on Macklemore's last album. And then sat down with Maya Manser and started producing stuff for her. She's a LA-based artist from Oregon and then Seattle. Yeah, she's around, you know. And then, I produced another kind of pop, a darker pop project for this amazing vocalist, Ala from Seattle, which is yet to come out. That'll be coming out soon. And then sitting down with a number of other pop artists and pop is also has a stigma as well, but you know, kind of this blend of pop and electronic is where I'm heading towards. You know, this, I mean, Tinsley's another artist I'm working with who's, I'm really excited about what we're doing. It's this mixture of pop and electronic music that kind of stems from my education of hip hop music and growing up listening to jazz music and listening to weird 80s music and stuff like that. You know, it's this culmination of all these different things that I've been exposed to as a young mind, you know, and leading to this point of where finally I'm my own artist, because before being my own artist, I was just producing for a bunch of people, which I love production and I'll do that to the day I die. But it was time to kind of start doing things on my own, because I had all these ideas that for myself that maybe nobody I was working with would be, you know, able to put out with regards to the music that they have. So I was like, well, what am I going to do with this? Might as well put it out myself and see what happens. It's working out so far.
I was going to say, it's not going too badly.
No, it's happening. So that's awesome.
And you got a lot of cool stuff coming up, which I want to make sure we touch on for sure. But do you mind kind of walking through kind of the growth process?
Because
you're producing for other people. And how, I guess when you started, I guess we should go rewind at least like 6 months or so.
Okay.
Of how did that kind of solo journey start? Of because you now playing some massive festivals. Yeah. You got a manager. You mentioned you have a lawyer. I don't want to just tell us everything, but kind of what did that look like when you realized, okay, I'm going to do this myself?
Yeah, I think it kind of came to a point where I'd experienced a few things about the industry that I didn't like. On the production side of not being given the credit that I deserve in certain ways, and not taking that personal, but taking it as experience and trying to learn, like, okay, what can I do differently? You know, because I'm not going to expect everybody else to fix it, but what can I do differently? And that really helped me kind of narrow down the different avenues that were in front of me. Okay, I can either keep producing and, you know, hopefully not get stepped on, or I can find this different path. I don't really know where it's going to take me yet, but, you know, I can kind of do my own thing, because the thing with where I was at with regards to production was I could only put out a song if said artist wanted to put out a song. I could only grow myself if, you know, whether it's, you know, social media or whatever it was, if that artist was willing to put on. You know, so that was kind of putting myself in this corner that I never liked, being in a corner where I had to depend on somebody else's success for my own. Not the kind of guy that I was raised to be. And so with that, it just kind of clicked, and I was like, look, I need to do some stuff on my own. I don't know what that's going to look like yet. But looking back, I realized, like, man, I've actually been creating stuff that I would release myself forever. Like, I'll look back and it just didn't click with me that I was making stuff that I just had back, you know, just put in my catalog and never looked back at. But I was creating that. I was creating, you know, trap music, electronic music, all these different things that I felt like, you know, was just kind of practicing, but I loved it. And I didn't necessarily have the avenue to release that kind of stuff until I made that decision. Like, okay, I'm going to do my own thing as an artist. And make my own success and not have to depend on all these other artists, which is not a bad thing. If you want to just be a producer, that's amazing. Just protect yourself. And that's the only thing. It's like, you have to understand your self-worth and understand that that producers can get shine as well. And that doesn't mean being in, you know, in the front of a billboard. Like, that's never been my thing. I don't really care if anybody knows my face walking down the street or not, but it's just about being able to continue to create, because us, you know, young people can create because we have the resources around us, hopefully, if we're lucky enough to have a roof over our head and, you know, and food in our bellies. But then you become an adult and you have to figure out how to do life, you know, and at some point your passion hopefully will bring enough funds that you can live, provide for your family, all these different things. And it's an amazing thing to see producers nowadays getting certain shine that they hadn't been getting in the past. You know, I mean, there's producers from the whole, you know, all across the world that are going on tour themselves.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge driving force financially for any artist, is tour and merchandise, stuff like that, right? And producers are able to do that now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Metro Boomin's going on tour.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, that's a special thing. And I don't know if a lot of people realize that, but that's really special.
Yeah.
You know, all these producers taking it to the next level in the industry and making leaps and bounds that normal quote unquote artists would make, but on the production side, and people care about that, which is so cool. you know, because I love producing, you know, but I see myself in my, as an artist myself now, I see myself as still in that production role. When I bring a vocalist in, I'm just producing a track. You know, I need to put all the best Lego pieces together to create something dope. And production will always be in my blood. And I'm not just the artist now and so-and-so produces for me. No, like, I love that art of creation, artist development and stuff like that. So, yeah, it kind of evolved very quickly. And I made that decision. And it was like, okay, it's time. Let's do it. And then just started, you know, kind of doing what I always do. Just put my head down to see what comes out.
Right.
You know, and waking up and be like, oh, shit, it's working. Okay, head back. Head back down, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, just grind it out.
No, for sure.
Cool. Do you mind walking through the process of, like, establishing... Well, actually, I guess before we get to, like, management and stuff like that, how did you go about a live show? Because you mentioned you kind of doing the production role, and then you step in. You know, I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. And so how did you step into the live circuit?
Yeah, then? So when I... Well, actually, it kind of... kind of got sprung upon me really quickly at a young age. When I was, what was that, 17? Yeah, I, maybe it was 18, whatever, 17, 18. I got asked to go on tour with Raz Simone, that artist, and I was like, dude, I've never, like, what? Okay. What do you want me to do? You know? And he was like, play keys and you know, DJ and stuff. I was like, okay, like, when? He's like, next week. And I was like, oh, tight, cool. What do I need to do? He's like, you need to, like, play all these key parts that, you know, that of the songs that you've produced and the songs that, you know, all the his whole catalog. I was like, damn, okay. So I just sat in it. He's like, you think you can do it? And I've always been the guy who's like, hell yeah, I can do it. Even if I'm like, dude, you can't do it.
Say yes, figure out between the time you have. Yeah.
Exactly. So I just sat down and learned all those parts and was like, okay, I'm going to be a keyboard DJ now. Like, I'm doing that. And we went out for 52 dates.
Dang,
2 months. 2 months on a tour bus. Went on a tour with Ritz from Strange Music. And
No way, Ritz?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Damn. Yeah, went all across the country, 52 different cities, and holy shit, that was an experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I talk about learning a lot in a short period of time, but you know, I learned how a tour goes, and I learned how to be a live artist, and it just felt like what I learned from that was actually it just kind of came easy. Mm-hmm. Actually, fun fact, before that tour, there was one show that we played opening for Diantwoord. Which, if you don't know Diantwoord, oh my gosh, holy insane. They're from South Africa, and they make absolutely obscure music. And it was a sold-out show in Oregon at some amphitheater, and it was like 4,000 people. And it was my first legit show ever. Oh, I was like, this is super scary.
I have to walk back on a statement I made a couple episodes ago where I was like, I mean, nobody walks out for their first show to a couple hundred people, and you're like, first show, 4,000 people.
Dude. And for the first 5 minutes, I wasn't getting audio out of my laptop. No. Like, what's going on? I had all the text on the stage. I'm like, you guys, this is my first show. I can't screw up. And then I just hit the volume button on my laptop. I'm like, I fixed it, guys. Don't worry. It was really it was that big of an issue. It was just the laptop volume.
That's button. Always the case.
Hey, man, that's my first show.
I've had it where I'm guilty of, after playing live for 10 years, like, why don't I have sound? Like, and I've got my amp. I'm like, it's not on standby. I'm like, the knob on my Gibson's all the way down to zero.
So many steps, man. Too many steps. But yeah, that was, you know, that. So started with that, went on that tour, came back and had the confidence of being a live musician, at least, you know, playing keys and, you know, because that was pretty intense. I had to play a live intro to every show before the artist came on stage and played keys the rest of the set. And then after that, I got asked to play with Sam Lachow, and then we played that sold-out Showbox show and played a number of shows with him, once again, playing keys and then, like, you know, making beats on stage, like playing the drum pad and stuff like that, and just learning all these little different elements that put together a live show that, and then, you know, started playing with St. Clair, and then I started adding the drum aspect to live shows and whatnot. And I was like, okay, when I'm doing this myself, like, I've done all these different things. Let me just put it together with the music that I'm making. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of came easy. And I was like, okay, what do I want? I want drums on stage, you know, adding key elements in certain areas and stuff that, Yeah, and just bring in my live vocalists that I feature on tracks and stuff, and just making it a whole fun live affair. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Just happened.
Yeah, this. So how long ago was that, your first show? You mentioned 17. I don't mean to be like
first solo show or first, yeah, like first ever show. Yeah. First solo show. Oh, technically, first solo show was the back bar of the Crocodile, like two years ago.
Right on.
Probably two years ago. And that was when I was like, let me see what this is all about. And then that was the first time I played just my stuff in front of people. And it was the back bar of Crocodile, so there was like 20 people there. But they were all going nuts. And I was like, whoa.
This is kind
of
cool.
I was like, dude, this is... And honestly, like playing in front of those 20 people, I got a totally different feeling than playing in front of thousands of people in all the other shows that I've ever played. And I was like, man, this is something to check out, because this is a totally different feeling.
Yeah, and it's like, this is my work.
Yeah, not to be possessive or selfish, but it is important at times. You have to realize, like, oh, man, this is me. Like, this is all me. I made all the decisions for this, and they still like it. This is cool. So I played that, and then it just kind of started to slowly progress after that. I played Upstream last year. It was like, I think it was like my second solo show.
Nice.
And that was just like, I didn't play drums on that, did I? No, I just had, no, it was just like a little DJ set thing. And I was like, man, but this is really tight. You know, so I just kind of progressed and then started building out what I want to be a live show, and taking out elements and songs that I want to play on the drums, and just making that what it is today. And then it's still ever evolving, and I want to just keep adding and adding and adding different difficult things for me to do on stage to make it even more gut-wrenching.
Commit to it and then figure out what to do, how to do it.
Exactly. So, but yeah, so it's, like I said, it's been going really quick on the solo side of things, but it's been a really long process on just the whole playing shows aspect of it. Like, been doing that for a long time, played hundreds and hundreds of shows, but we're very, very, still very new to this whole solo thing. So just taking that knowledge and bringing it to a new area
for sure. And you're doing a lot fast. Like, you've done more in the past couple of years than some people have done their whole career. So that's pretty neat.
Oh,
so,
man, I'm blessed. Believe me. Like, I look at, and I'm the type to not ever like congratulate myself. I like, I hate that. I hate patting myself on the back, and people are like, you did such a good job. I'm like, you know, like, but yeah, you know, I don't know. It's just that
I just want to go play.
Yeah, you know, or just like, you know, my family, like, oh my God, you did so many amazing things. And I'm just like, honestly, like, it's not amazing compared to the stuff that I do want to do. So let's just keep going. But
for sure,
at times it's important to actually sit back and be like, man, this is crazy, the stuff that we've accomplished. You know, and I couldn't do any of this without my team. Like, oh my gosh, shouts to my whole team.
Yeah.
Like, they're, they make my life a lot easier.
Do you mind walking through that? Like, because I think what a lot of people don't realize too is, especially people see pop stars and like, oh, but they're so incredible, and there's teams that are behind people. Do you mind kind of?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Like, what was your thought process behind building it, and I guess why did you build it in the way that you did?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing I'll start with is I actually co-founded a media production company 2 years ago with my best friend Ronnie Hamilton, and we sat down. We're like, at the time, we're like, let's create this giant business that focuses on music, fashion, film, and charity. And like a year later, it's like, whoa, that's a lot of stuff, you know. And it's, you know, it's narrowed itself down to visual media production and whatnot and stuff like that. So yeah, the first and very dear to my heart, Ronnie Hamilton. He's my creative director on the music side, and then my manager, Justin Marine. He came in at a very pivotal point when I was kind of still in that like, is this the right thing to be doing right now? Stage, and came in with some, you know, just powerful words of like, you need to do this, and I want to be a part of it. So can we do that? And you know, I mean, Justin's how do I describe him? A bulldog. And the thing is, I like surrounding myself with bulldogs, with people who, my dad's a bulldog, you know, Ronnie's a bulldog, Justin's a bulldog. We're all out there chomping just to get it right, you know. And that's kind of who I build my team around, just people who just grind. You know, they just grind, all those people, you know, that's all they do. So whether it's, you know, grinding to build a career or whatever it is, they're there to do it. And the fact that they're willing to take that time and have that passion towards building my career, which I try to stress to them, is our career. I always say our, yeah, because that, I don't want this to be a me thing. Like, it's not at all. I'm not doing this to make myself a bunch of money. You know, I'm doing this so everybody around me can eat. And that's just as real as it goes, you know. And for sure. And just surrounding myself with Bulldogs is so important to me, and people that just make things happen. So, yeah, Ronnie handles a lot of, like, kind of where is this whole thing heading? He's a very forward thinker, and that's so helpful on that end. Justin handles day-to-day. He handles booking,
That alone
he cleans up all the messes, which is awesome. My dad just looks scary, so he may, you know, he kind of just... He's, I guess you could call him a tour manager, yeah, security, you know, therapist, whatever. Connor Jalbert, shout out to Connor Jalbert, the whole Fortitude team, that's what the company's called, that we made. And that whole team just handling all my visuals and with regards to pictures and video and just content in general. Huge asset. That's very amazing. Talented dudes. Connor and, you know, the whole team. Been working with Connor Jalbert as a videographer for years. I mean, we've been playing baseball together since we were, like, you know, sixth grade. And we've both kind of grown in our own directions. Very proud of him and all the work that he's, you know, been doing on the photo video side. And just, I see him progressing in a very similar way that I'm progressing as well on the music side, but on his side, on the visual side. So the team's very strong, and I've never felt this comfortable with who I've surrounded myself with. So
That's awesome, yeah, man. And so important too. You hear about it at any scale. That's the number one thing.
No,
keeping your head on straight and grind it out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know they'd slap me across the face if I ever got my head off to a different direction.
Yeah.
I'm the shit. Shut up, boy. My dad would tell me, I know that. So yeah. So it's been an amazing experience with those guys. So
that's awesome.
Just,
man,
keeps going, you know.
Right on. Before I start to grill you on the stuff and try to stump you, what's next for you? I know we mentioned some of the shows coming up, and feel free if there's anything you want to talk about, if you know when you're playing where, kind
of
thing.
Ooh, busy summer coming up. Yeah. So I guess it goes in the order of Paradiso, Capitol Hill Block Party, and then Bumbershoot to kind of to put the icing on top of the cake for the summer. So
for a Seattle guy, yeah, born and raised, that is huge.
Oh man, believe me, and I know that, and I'm very thankful for all these experiences. And so with that, I mean, new music's coming for sure. Just kind of in the creation stage right now of putting it all together. Something's coming out this summer, I can tell you that. Maybe a few things, we'll see. But yeah, bunch of cool stuff's cooking. So no worries, it's coming.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Stump me.
You ready?
Yeah.
So if you, we'll assume you have all the standard Ableton stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For the rest of your career, you get three plugins.
Mm-hmm.
What are they and why?
Okay. Plugins. Is that, okay. Time out. Does that, because we gotta get this right.
That's fair,
here.
Yeah.
Are we talking musical plugins? Like, or am I talking like, because I'll tell you, on the technical side, I'd want EQ, reverb, and compression.
Yeah, we'll assume you got all that kind of stuff.
Okay, I have all that.
Yeah.
I'm talking the sound creating.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, that'd be messed up. Oh, actually, maybe if you can answer both, that'd be
okay.
Good, but I think you just
hit
it.
Well, so number one, on the technical side, I'd want EQ, reverb, and compression.
Yep.
EQ cleans it up. Reverb cleans it up even more because it can make something terrible sound amazing. And compression can be used in so many different ways with regards to just bringing sounds out. Not to mention sidechain compression or all these different aspects of compression, over-the-top compression that can totally bring out different aspects of sound. That compression's a very versatile instrument, I guess you can say. So yeah, EQ, reverb, and compression on the technical side. On the musical side, Kontakt, the whole suite, because that's the,
is that one plugin?
You know, it's a house.
We'll
slide. We'll call it. Yeah, it's a plethora of plugins, but it's, Because then, I mean, if I just have to say one instrument, I'm going to say, okay, a piano, you know, let me get my, right. my yeah, Alicia Keys piano. But Kontakt has it all in there. It's a very, it's a culmination of a bunch of very organic instruments and emulations of old vintage stuff. And about, you know, like.
I'm not familiar with it.
Dude. Woo! Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Kontakt. It's made by Native Instruments.
Okay.
Very tight. So I would say Kontakt, Serum. Serum oh, is yeah. just, I mean, synth powerhouse, just. You know, man, soundscape creation and everything with that is insane. Mm, and the last one, probably if we're talking plugins and then not mixing plugins, probably Signplant.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Not many What's people that? Do. Damn. I don't know if I should tell you guys that. No. No, no, it's cool. Want, we all have this.
In your back pocket, oh, go
dude.
For it.
Nah, dude. Signplant's really tight. It's like a very, weird ass instrument, and it like bases itself off of like how a plant like can be replanted and seeds can be it's nuts.
Whoa,
it's nuts.
What?
Anyway, it's very visual, and it to change all the parameters, it pulls up this big like DNA strand, and you like, yeah, it's nuts. It's way over the top. But there's also a random button that'll just randomize all the parameters, and you'll come out with some crazy sound. That one is just super fun because you're going to be able to make sounds that nobody else has ever made.
Yeah, that's
which is
bananas.
Mad tight. Yeah, it's super tight.
My friend Aaron and I always joke around, like, thanks to the nerds. Not that we're not music nerds, but when these guys that go build the algorithms that do all this stuff, we're like, thank you.
Oh, believe me. Yeah.
Couldn't do it without you.
No, seriously. No, straight up. But yeah, that one is, I don't use it very often. I really don't. But when I'm bored, that is the ultimate cure.
I feel like, yeah, I was going to say, if you got writer's block, if I could just be like, you know what, whatever sound comes out, I'm going with it or something like that. Say, like, off we go.
The music gods wanted me to make this sound, you know, you hit the random button and it just happens. So yeah, man, it's that's a powerful plugin on its own. So I guess, yeah, those three, in a way, I'm sure I'd change my mind in like a week, but those three right now are probably the most useful.
Cool.
And versatile. Yeah.
All right. Seattle born and raised.
Mm-hmm.
Of a place you haven't played yet, you get to play one spot the rest of your career.
Over and over?
Yeah. You can, it can be once a year you play, but you get one spot in Seattle that you play. Mm. What are you picking? Seattle proper.
One spot to play over and over. See, there's two options I could go here. I could either go super big or just nice and intimate, you know. That's a good one. I like that question. I love the showbox market. Just the feeling of the market, because it's always like this ultimate, like it just feels so like but one venue over and over. I guess it's tough because I haven't played every venue.
Right.
If I played Paramount, I might be able to say Paramount, but
yeah.
I haven't played it, so I don't necessarily know.
That's true.
Good but out of everything, let's just say out of everything I've played so far, probably Showbox Market, just because the feeling there, not to mention their sound's pretty good too.
Yeah.
The way it's mixed is pretty tight, but just the feeling there, it always gives me just this, whoever's in that building is the next thing.
Right.
You know?
That's so true.
Not like I don't want to always be the next thing.
Right.
That sucks. But I guess just that feeling it gives you of like, man, this person right here has potential to do something huge. Because Seattle kind of breaks up into like tiers of like, you start here, then you go to this venue, and this venue, and then you're off to the races. So, but yeah, man, I just... Showbox has always given me a very like nostalgic feeling, but also a very epic kind of feeling of, man, this person's gonna do something. So
yeah
probably Showbox Market.
Cool. And last one, I haven't managed to stump you just yet.
Yeah.
But of the people you're producing, you get to build a bill for your Showbox show. It's you headlining. What two people are you putting on that bill with you?
Only two?
Yeah.
Well, here's the cool thing. I get to get out of that because during my set, I can bring out as many vocalists as I want.
That's true. That's true. You get two acts to open.
That's tough. because people are going to be mad at me for
if we don't want anger, I can bleep it out. We'll just say
yeah, beep and beep.
Yeah, there
they're
you go.
Both super dope.
There you go.
Now, I work with so many people that I think it all depends on that show, and yeah. I love putting on for the people that are around me, but and you know, most importantly, I put on for what I'm working on at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I'm working on right now is the stuff with Tinsley and the stuff with Scarlett, which is great. You know, but I don't want to say that they'd both be too, because I'd be bringing both of them out for my set probably.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing with Ala because she's super dope, and the same thing with like John because he's a very good performer and violin player. But like, they're all hopefully gonna be on future records of mine, so I'd bring them all out. So. That is me being really nice to them if they're listening to this. So I guess of those outside of that, man.
Because like you said, it the bill matters too. If you're like, this is going to be this certain focus yeah. or genre, well, you're not going to pull
yeah.
in a rock band
that's
to open.
Yeah, I think it depends on the focus of the show. If the show is meant to be a multi-genre out there show, I'm going to have like a Ryan Carvale come out because he's so... versatile and pulling in very emotional music. But if the show is more electronic focused, I like building big bills. You know, I want to build a big bill with people that I feel are like really doing something. I don't know if I've met the people yet in the electronic industry that I'd want to build that big bill with. There's some really dope up and coming people from Seattle,
mm-hmm.
like really dope. Like shout out to my homie Devereaux. Like you'll know that name too. You know, like that kind of thing. So the electronic build, I don't even know if I can answer that one realistically. But what I would want to see at that show is I'd want to see Tinsley. I'd want to see Ala. I'd want to see Scarlett. And I'd want to see St. Clair.
Right on.
I'd say that. Yeah.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Massive summer coming up for you. Thank you for taking the time to do this.
Absolutely.
I know you're probably swamped and got a lot of stuff to run to, but thank you again. We'll be sure to push all this stuff.
Yeah.
Best of luck. Really appreciate you coming on here.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate your time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could you believe I could be different? I'll be the difference. Lift you high, not understand your hesitation. My reputation is no surprise. So let me redefine you, and you can see the time move just like tears in the eyes do. And when you're feeling alone, oh baby, I'll be right here between the sea and silence. So breathe easy, my dear. You can find sunshine in the rain. I will come running when you call my name. See the time move just like tears in the eyes do. And when you're feeling alone, oh baby, I'll be right here between the sea and silence. So breathe easy, my dear. You can find sunshine in the rain. I will come running when you call my name. Even a broken heart can beat again. Forget about the one who calls you pain. I swear I love you in a different way.
swear I love you in a different way. Hey,
hey. All right, that was a Different Way remix by Jake Crocker. Be sure to check him out this Friday at Paradiso. He's going to be on the main stage starting at 3 p.m. Again, that's this Friday, June 15th. He's also going to be at Capitol Hill Block Party Friday, July 20th, 9:30 on the Numo stage. And he's going to be playing Bumper Shoot this fall, so stay tuned for details. And if you want to listen to the artists that we've been discussing during these episodes, follow Made for Music on Spotify, as we're actually going to be putting together playlists comprised of the songs that we discuss on both the local and national level. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please go ahead and rate us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. We really appreciate you all helping us out there, and we will see you next time.